Support for this podcast comes from the Fletcher School of Global Affairs at Tufts University. To start your future as a global changemaker, you must have context across fields like international business, cybersecurity, energy policy, and more. Don't just study global affairs, shape them. Visit fletcher.tufts.edu.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Kimberly Atkins, and this is On Point. The redacted version of the Mueller report will be released this morning. In the past hour, Attorney General William Barr held a press conference to address process questions and give an overview of the report. Here he is moments ago.
The evidence developed by the special counsel is not sufficient to establish that the president committed an obstruction of justice offense.
The report will be delivered to Capitol Hill between 11 a.m. and noon and then posted on the special counsel's website for all the world to see. Last month, Mueller's team found no evidence that the Trump campaign conspired with Russia to influence the 2016 election. The special counsel did not take a position on whether or not Trump obstructed justice during the investigation. This hour on Point, waiting for Mueller. Join us. Will anything in the report change your view of the president, this administration, this Congress? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at onpointradio. With us from Washington is McKay Coppins, staff writer at The Atlantic. He's the author of The Wilderness, Deep Inside the Republican Party's Combative, Contentious, Chaotic Quest to Take Back the White House. Hello, McKay.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for joining us. So I just wanted to, off the top, give us your impression of this press conference that the Attorney General just wrapped up.
I thought it was a fascinating event, not the least because I think that the Attorney General really went out on a limb beyond where I think a lot of attorney generals in the past might have, where he positioned himself, at least in part, as sort of a face of the administration and a, if not defender, at least somewhat of an apologist for President Trump. He went up there and he explained the findings of the report as he sees them, what he sees as most relevant. He repeated the term no collusion multiple times, an echo of what we've seen President Trump tweet for the past, 2 years. But he also, tried to place in context the various questions around obstruction. He noted that there were 10 episodes involving potential acts of obstruction and the president that the Mueller report examines. And then he offered what seemed to be his opinion of the case, which was that because there was no underlying conspiracy or collusion that was established, that questions of obstruction were, if not irrelevant, then less important than some of the president's critics seem to find.
Now, you brought up the attorney general echoing President Trump's refrain that the report found no collusion between the Trump campaign and Russian election interference. Let's take a listen to that.
Indeed, as the report states, quote, the investigation did not identify evidence that any U.S. person knowingly or intentionally coordinated with the IRA's interference operation, unquote. Put another way, the special counsel found no collusion by any Americans in IRA's illegal activities.
Now, the IRA refers to the St. Petersburg-based Internet Research Agency, which engaged in online influence operations. But McKay, he paused even when he said no collusion.
It sounded like he was providing the soundbite that he hoped that, the evening news would use tonight. This gets at kind of one of the main criticisms of this whole event, this whole press conference, which is that we had already had a summary from the attorney general when Robert Mueller completed his investigation last month. The question that a lot of Democrats are raising is, why did we need the attorney general to come out here and contextualize and frame and, in their view, spin this report that he's about to release? Why not just release it and let the press and members of Congress and the public to read it and come to their own conclusions?
I found interesting as well that the attorney general said that he and Deputy Attorney General Rod Rosenstein disagreed with some of the special counsel's legal theories when it came to obstruction. What did you think about that?
Yeah, well, that gets at one of the kind of central tensions here between the special counsel and the attorney general, and frankly, is one of the reasons that a lot of people think that this that William Barr is the one that President Trump picked to be his attorney general, which is that he has a legal view of executive authority that predates President Trump. You know, nobody is saying that this is a completely partisan conclusion, but he has a view of executive authority that's pretty broad and pretty sweeping. And for this president, in the situation that he finds himself, is pretty convenient and useful. And so the idea, you know, we're going to have to read the report in the coming days and see what those legal theories are that he might be disagreeing with. He was asked about it and didn't really answer the question in the press conference. But it does appear that some of the things that people on the Mueller team might have considered potentially obstructive are that's an area where the attorney general did not see obstruction and is one of the reasons that he declined to bring charges or prosecute.
Okay, as you would expect, we have a lot of callers waiting to ask some questions. David is calling from Lexington, Massachusetts. Hi, David.
Oh, no. Hi.
What's your question?
I'm just going to say that nothing in the report or that's not in the report is going to change my mind about the president. He's unfit for the job.
And what about if there is some evidence that shows, for example, as the attorney general said, that he had no corrupt motive, that's not going to change your mind about the president at all?
You know, there's so much else he's done that's you know, really terrible that he's alienating our allies. He thinks global warming's a hoax. It doesn't matter. I mean, I think he probably does have corrupt motive. He's shown that time and time again in his life.
Okay, David, we appreciate you chiming in. It echoes a comment on our website from Walter that says, even though I detest Donald Trump, I'm sick to death of the Mueller report hysteria. McKay, how do you think the public is going to react to this once it finally comes out?
Well, I think that sentiment is shared by a significant swath of the public on both sides of the aisle. Certainly conservatives and Republicans have argued that this is a witch hunt. They've come around to kind of the president's view of this. But also, I think a lot of people who are not as engaged politically, who are kind of following this as casual news consumers, have now seen 2 years of updates on Russia and collusion and bit by bit incremental developments in an investigation that, frankly, even a lot of DC insiders struggle to fully grasp or understand. And so, it would be great if the release of this report could provide a moment of catharsis for the country. I think more likely what you're going to see is a lot of people cherry picking from the report to find facts that support their own conclusions, their own views, and kind of further double down on where they are on both the president and the questions of obstruction and collusion.
Well, joining me now in the studio is Nancy Gertner. She's a retired federal judge and now a lecturer at Harvard Law School. She's a legal analyst for member station WBUR. Judge Gertner, thanks so much for coming in.
Good to be here.
So I want to ask you the same question I started with McKay. What was your overall impression of what the attorney general said today?
I kept on thinking of what he could have said to convey the same message. But didn't say. Let me start with what he could have said. When he began by talking about the extent to which there was efforts of Russian hacking, Russian disinformation, he could have said that he had no doubt then that the investigation was appropriate to begin. That was a good thing. Would have been a good thing to say. He doesn't say that, although he implies it. And then he's using the language, not the language of the law, but the language of the political discourse in talking about no collusion rather than the language of no conspiracy. And I'm looking forward to what he said about the obstruction of justice issue. The obstruction of justice is an act and a corrupt intent. It sounds like, we're just sort of projecting, that there will be lots of instances of obstructive acts, things that Trump did, beginning with Comey's firing, that would suggest an obstructive act. The question will be corrupt intent. And I have to admit that I started to smile when he was saying that he saw no corrupt intent, or rather Mueller saw no corrupt intent, because the president was so frustrated by these investigations that some of the things he said and did were a product of that frustration. That is a spin. Pure and simple.
Yeah. And what about the attorney general also seemed to sort of link the collusion investigation with the obstruction one in sort of saying, look, if there was no collusion, if there was no corrupt intent for collusion, that cuts against corrupt intent for obstruction. Do you agree with that?
Well, that was in his letter, which is to say that if you can't prove conspiracy to obstruct the election, then why is he conspiracy to interfere in the election, then why is he obstructing anything? He has no motive to obstruct anything. That's actually doesn't make sense. One can obstruct because there's a possibility of someone coming up with something and you're trying to stop it. But it really is, the corrupt intent issue that mostly is interesting, because the corrupt intent issue is really a spin on the president's motives. It's not easy to prove, and I appreciate that. But to say that someone did what they did not because they wanted to stop the investigation, but because they were upset, is really not a line that I've seen drawn before.
All right, I want to get some callers in here. Peter is calling from Oneida, New York. Go ahead, Peter.
Hi. After 2.5 years of reckless speculation, we're going to see the Mueller report soon. And I think that it would be very prudent for people to wait until they actually see it and wait until they actually read it. I'm very disappointed that some of your listeners, one of your earlier callers, basically said, I don't care what's in the report. I don't like Trump. I don't care what the report says. I think that's a really bad thing for our country. We are very polarized.
All right. All right, Peter, thanks for that call. McKay, Nancy, stick with us. We're looking ahead to the release of the redacted Mueller report later this morning. After the break, presidential historian Mark Updegrove joins the conversation. You, too, can join the conversation. Is your computer fired up and ready to read the report? I'm Kimberly Atkins. This is On Point. This is On Point. I'm Kimberly Atkins. We're waiting for the redacted Mueller report to drop on Capitol Hill and for the rest of the world to see. You can join the conversation. Will anything in there change your view of the president? Follow us on Twitter and find us on Facebook at On Point Radio. We're talking with retired federal judge Nancy Gertner, presidential historian Mark Updegrove, and McKay Coppins, who's joining us via Skype. He's a staff writer at The Atlantic. Mark Updegrove, thank you so much for joining us now from Austin. You're president and CEO of the Lyndon Baines Johnson Foundation and the former director of the LBJ Presidential Library. Welcome back, Mark.
Thanks so much, Kimberly.
So what was your overall impression of how the attorney general played, sort of previewed this report that's coming out next hour?
Well, as several of your guests have said, I think what I was struck by is the pointed use of the phrase no collusion, which is, of course, the phrase that Donald Trump himself has been using constantly to discredit this investigation and show that he has been exonerated. And I think at the end of the day, that's exactly what Trump's supporters want to hear. Donald Trump knows that, and likely William Barr does as well. The historians try to take the long view, and it's hard to have any view of this at all without seeing the report itself, but it seemed to me as though William Barr was taking the Trump party line and spinning the story. As I believe David said earlier, there was really no need to further contextualize the report. We had already seen the contextualization of the report in the four-page memo that he had issued earlier.
And I want to get to your point about sort of mirroring the president's language. Since Attorney General Barr released that four-page summary, President Trump has been decidedly on message about its findings over the past 3 weeks. Let's take a listen.
The special counsel completed its report and found no collusion and no obstruction.
As far as I'm concerned, I don't care about the Mueller report. I've been totally exonerated.
The collusion delusion is over.
Mark, you're a historian. Is no collusion the new I'm not a crook? I mean, what put this in some historical context?
Well, that Donald Trump is framed the entire thing around whether he colluded with the Russian government around the election or not. But there are deeper issues at play. Ronald Reagan was not indicted around Iran-Contra when that scandal arose in his second term. But he was contrite about his involvement. He did mislead the American people. And as he said in a statement to the American people after the report from Lawrence Walsh, the special prosecutor in that case, he said, "Your trust is what gives a president his powers of leadership and personal strength." Ronald Reagan knew that the erosion of that trust reduced his power and his strength as a president. And it could well be that the revelations in this report, even if they don't show that the president colluded, will further erode Donald Trump's trust with the American people and reduce his ability to enact an agenda.
McKay Coppins, this report is going to be headed to Congress, as you know. Jerry Nadler, who's the chairman of the House Judiciary Committee, said Attorney General William Barr is trying to lay the groundwork for how the public will react to the Mueller report. Let's take a listen.
The central concern here is that the Attorney General Barr is not allowing the facts of the Mueller report to speak for themselves, but is trying to bake in the narrative about the report to the benefit of the White House.
McKay, what do you think the reaction from Congress will be?
I think it'll be fairly polarized, as it will be in the rest of the country. I do think you're going to see Democrats, as we've already seen, they're calling on Robert Mueller to testify. The Attorney General, I believe, in that press conference said that he had no objection to that. So it sounds likely that that will happen. I think that Democrats are going to seize on these episodes of potential obstruction and spend a lot of time talking about that. The question, though, is will they go as far as, opening new investigations? Will Republicans, as President Trump has been calling, try to open investigations in which they investigate the investigators? You're already seeing, as we're talking, I'm flipping through the different cable news channels to see how they're covering it. And you see that CNN and MSNBC are talking about these acts of potential obstruction. Fox News has been using the no collusion talking point as their main chyron. Mm-hmm. And so I think that the way the media covers it is probably mirroring the way that you're going to see the two parties in Congress react to it and where they're going to go from here.
Nancy Gertner, a little earlier we were talking a little bit about the mindset behind President Trump and how that factored in. Attorney General Barr echoed President Trump's talking point of no collusion, and he said it shows the president thought the Russia investigation was politically motivated. Let's take a listen.
There is substantial evidence to show that the president was frustrated and angered by his sincere belief that the investigation was undermining his presidency, propelled by his political opponents, and fueled by illegal leaks.
What do you think about that legal analysis?
Well, it's a very curious one in the sense that he had a sincere belief. He was frustrated by his view that this was an illegal investigation. But one of the premises of what Barr was saying is that it was appropriate because there had been Russian hacking. So he was frustrated by something which he didn't have a right to be frustrated at, which was an appropriate inquiry. The other thing is to then characterize even someone who is frustrated at the unprecedented investigation could turn around and nevertheless try to deep six an appropriate investigation. Having said all of that, the third point is that it's very difficult to determine corrupt intent from someone you never interviewed. And so you really didn't have all the factors. But everyone who looked at this case understood that the question of the intent with which Trump did what he did was critical. the account from Barr makes it look like a jump ball to me as opposed to clear. You know, one can imagine I fired Comey to get off the Russian investigation because I thought the Russian investigation was a witch hunt. But of course, I wasn't wrong. I was wrong about that, as the report suggests.
I want to go to a caller. Zach is calling from Illinois. Hi, Zach.
Hi, thank you for having me on. I'm just going to, echo a bit of the sentiment that was just made. I'm not sure what anyone truly expected and why so much weight has been placed in this report. Trump has already had his, you know, Barr placed in the Department of Justice, and everyone basically already saw Trump admit to obstruction in front of Lester Holt, in front of cameras on NBC. And so while the argument can easily be made that his intent in that instance was petty narcissism, whether that's better than corrupt intent is to be seen.
Well, you know, I'm going to go to McKay, and thank you for that call, Zach. I'm going to go to McKay on that. We're going to be getting these pieces of evidence that are both inculpatory and exculpatory, to use legal terminology, on this issue of obstruction. And some folks, like Zach, have seen with their own eyes the president do things that looked like obstruction. How do you think the White House is going to respond to that and message that, and members of Congress? McKay, are you there? You know what? I'll throw that.
Sorry, can you hear me now?
Yes, I hear you now. Go ahead.
So I think that that's an interesting question, because I think that what you've seen the White House do since the 4-page summary came out, and I think they'll continue with this strategy, is fixate on the initial question of, was there collusion? Was there a conspiracy between the Russian government and the Trump campaign? And point to the fact that there was none established. And then they'll, on this broader question of obstruction, they'll use the argument that I've heard them making for a long time. You know, one of the initial things that people like the caller have pointed to is that during the campaign, Donald Trump stood up and said, "Russians, if you're listening, I want to see Hillary Clinton's emails." Right. And they've said, well, isn't that an example of collusion in plain sight? And the Trump campaign's response and then the White House's response has been, well, that happened in plain sight and people already knew about it and they elected him. I think that what we'll hear in the coming days and weeks is these potential acts of obstruction didn't happen in secret. They happened in public. People already have their opinions about them. They already know what happened. There's been exhaustive coverage of them. And so unless the special counsel is willing to come out and make a definitive call and say this was obstruction, which, of course, he declined to do, then this is up for public debate and you can have your opinions. But but the attorney general is completely within bounds to not prosecute and to not pursue any further prosecutions.
All right. Alex is on the line. He's calling from Worcester, Massachusetts. Hi, Alex.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. My question is about this term of art, corrupt intent. The way that I heard AG Barr talk about it earlier, it kind of made me, my understanding was that his definition of corrupt intent is more centered on why you would want to obstruct or hinder an investigation rather than whether or not you wanted to obstruct or hinder it. And he seemed to say that maybe because there was not an underlying crime, but Trump was, you know, very frustrated he wasn't trying to do something for a corrupt reason. And I was wondering if there was any kind of precedent for that, because to me, corrupt intent would be wanting to stop an investigation, period, not why I wanted to do it.
Nancy?
The corrupt intent is that what you were doing was not inadvertent, was not accidental, but was really an effort to interfere with the proceeding. And the question of how far back you go is the issue. You know, I told my neighbor who's just being subpoenaed that she shouldn't talk about me or else I'm going to, slash her tires. And my corrupt intent, I did it knowingly, I did it intentionally because I didn't want bad information to come out about me. It could be part of a broader plan, but it doesn't have to be. And that's what's interesting about this. Let's assume the president was massively frustrated by an investigation which he thought was insubstantial. The investigation, as it turns out, was not insubstantial. that frustration can't be the basis then for obstructing justice. In other words, there's no reason that the corrupt intent has to be, I wanted to cover up my Russian involvement, as opposed to, I wanted to get rid of this investigation because it was undermining me. There are lawful ways of doing that, which is you wait for an investigation, you wait for the conclusion, and then there are unlawful ways of doing it. And if his only purpose was to stop this because it was unprecedented and he thought it was a witch hunt, it seems to me that that's in the zone of corrupt intent. Let me just say one other thing. All of this is about whether Trump committed a crime. The impeachment issues about fitness for office are less than crimes. Mm. And so the question is whether in the Mueller report there will be anything that comprises impeachable offenses, even if not formally a crime.
All right. I want to go to Mark Updegrove on the issue of how the White House fully cooperated, in the words of Attorney General Barr. He said that the president took no action that deprived the special counsel of his ability to conclude this investigation. Mark, do you think that was meant to sort of help frame the White House in terms of how now Congress is looking at this with a potential eye on obstruction, and also for history to sort of say, hey, this president was cooperating, and therefore, you know, that's what the public should keep in mind.
Yes, I do believe that was the case. It was pointed out earlier that the president was not interviewed, which is, I think, a significant thing as well. He did not weigh in on this directly and probably should have. Look, one of the things that you must contextualize here in terms of the special prosecutor statute in the course of our history is these are inherently political processes. They've been political since the beginning of time. If we go back to the last major special prosecutor situation, it was with in the Clinton administration. And Bill Clinton appointed somebody, a special prosecutor, to look into Whitewater, a Arkansas a real estate scheme that he and his wife Hillary had participated in, and they looked into whether there were illegal activities around that. The special prosecutor was ultimately fired, not by Bill Clinton, but by a circuit court in Washington, D.C., and Kenneth Starr was put in, and that led to other investigations that eventually led to Clinton being investigated for sexual impropriety. We, of course, know Monica Lewinsky. The point is here there was no illegality, but it had an adverse effect on the Clinton administration. Ultimately, he was impeached by Congress, but not expelled by the Senate with a two-thirds majority vote. It also is significant to mention that Clinton's popularity increased during that time. It did not decrease during the impeachment.
And Mark, that, you know, that was 20 years on, and we know now how history views President Clinton. How do you think history will look back on this moment in 10 years or 20 years or 50 years?
It's very difficult to say. It takes at least a generation for us to get a clear perspective on a president's administration, because it takes that long for passions to cool, particularly with a president as controversial and divisive as President Trump has been. But I will say, and I'll go back to that word, the one thing that we know about President Trump is he is extraordinarily divisive. And he hasn't done anything to really manifestly unite this country, and has made this process polarizing for the American people. I think there's no question about that. But it's hard to know how history will ultimately judge this this president, particularly, again, since we haven't seen what is written up in the Mueller report and what's been redacted.
And members of the public are already making up their minds about this. Here's a comment from our website from Tom W. It says, Schiff, Nadler et al. Should be prosecuted for obstruction of justice. They lied about collusion for 2 years and promoted the collusion hoax in an effort to influence the outcome of the Mueller investigation. And another comment says, is there anyone else hoping for for some leaks from Mueller or his team. We've known them to not leak very much. I'm going to ask my guests to hold tight. We're awaiting the release of the Mueller report. You can join the conversation. What's your question for our panel? I'm Kimberly Atkins. This is On Point. This is On Point. I'm Kimberly Atkins. In the next hour, a redacted version of the Mueller report will land on Capitol Hill. The 400-plus page report is the capstone of the 2-year investigation into Russian interference in the 2016 election. In March, the special counsel did not find that the Trump campaign or anyone associated with it conspired with Russians to influence the outcome of the 2016 presidential election. It did not reach a conclusion about obstruction of justice by President Trump. You can join the conversation. President Trump said, "I don't care about the Mueller report." Do you? Follow us on Twitter and find us on Facebook at On Point Radio. We're talking with presidential historian Mark Updegrove, retired federal judge Nancy Gertner, and McKay Coppins, a staff writer at The Atlantic. I want to play a little bit of sound here from Attorney General Barr from just a while ago. He said, "President Trump's personal counsel requested and were given the opportunity to read the final version of the redacted report before its public release."
That request was consistent with the practice followed under the Ethics in Government Act, which permitted individuals named in a report prepared by an independent counsel the opportunity to read the report before publication. The president's personal lawyers were not permitted to make and did not request any redactions.
So, McKay, it seems that the president and his legal team got a bit of a sneak peek before Congress did. What did you make of that?
Yeah, I mean, certainly it's going to fuel further, suspicion of this process. But if we are to take the attorney general at his words that the president's personal counsel wasn't able to request redactions or did not request redactions, that we're not seeing some kind of altered report as a result of that, then my hope is that the facts of the report when it's released is ultimately going to triumph, and that all these other questions about the process will continue to be debated, but will be secondary to what's actually found by the special counsel.
And Nancy, on this issue of getting that advanced copy, I guess, the attorney general said that it's consistent with the law. Do you see any legal complications there?
I don't see any legal complications. But, you know, I want to envision an alternative universe. If this report really did end this investigation and exonerate Donald Trump, wouldn't it have been better to do this, to play this more straight than the attorney general did? That's not a legal issue, but a political issue. That is to say, not give a sneak peek to one side when they didn't with the other, not to do a 4-page summary when presumably there were summaries internal to the report that Mueller had prepared, not to use the language of Trump rather than the language of the law. If he had talked about a conspiracy rather than collusion, it seems to me this would have felt very different. And likewise, if he had begun to sort of redress the damage that he did by talking about spying, by saying Trump may have believed that this was an illegitimate investigation, but it wasn't. There was evidence of Russian interference, and there was evidence of campaign contacts, and that had to be investigated.
I want to get a call in here. Kevin is calling from Portland, Maine. Hi, Kevin.
Good morning.
Good morning. Go ahead, Kevin.
Yes, I have a theory that I'd like your panel to address. Isn't it possible that Barr put out this glowing report, let's call it what it is, total vindication of the president, out in front of the report, because the report actually has quite a bit of politically damaging, embarrassing, ill-advised meetings, whatever, and Barr wants to control the narrative
totally
ahead of what's going to have a lot of damaging, embarrassing information for the president? Thank you.
Yeah.
No, I think that's right. I think that's right. And I think that's why people have to put this in context. And the context is there is the, you know, it's like adding up a column of figures. And does it amount to a crime? Well, he's saying, no, it does not amount to a crime. Does it amount to impeachable offense? Well, it may. The details in that may amount to an impeachable offense. Bear in mind that, you know, Clinton and Nixon were both articles of impeachment included obstruction of justice. And no one was talking about prosecuting them for that. And then the third category is what does it say about impropriety, fitness for office? Which is also in play with the special prosecutor's report. So you're right. I mean, the notion that there's a need for spin is troubling here and suggests that there's something there.
Mark Updegrove, from a historical context, do you think there is something to Kevin's question that was Attorney General Barr looking at the long game here?
Perhaps so. Again, I think the Attorney General was adopting the Trump party line and spinning, but I think Nancy makes a very, very good point, which is vitally important here, which is there are two different things. There's a big difference between illegality and a determination of, as to whether somebody is fit for office. And there could very definitely be revelations in this report when we see it that leads lawmakers to conclude that this president is not fit for office. And that could lead to impeachment proceedings in the House, which could then lead to a trial in the Senate, which would necessitate a two-thirds majority vote to expel the president from office. So, there does not have to be a crime committed here for the president to be seen as being unfit for office and to have essentially what would amount to a no-confidence vote in Congress.
Now, I want to talk about the issue of executive privilege here. Attorney General Barr said because the White House voluntarily cooperated with the special counsel's investigation, President Trump would have been well within his rights to assert executive privilege over a significant portion of the report's material. Let's listen.
Following my March 29th letter, the Office of the White House Counsel requested the opportunity to review the redacted version of the report in order to advise the president on the potential invocation of privilege, which is consistent with longstanding practice. Following that review, the president confirmed that in the interest of transparency and full disclosure to the American people, he would not assert privilege over the special counsel's report.
I want to go first to McKay. That the fact that the president did not invoke executive privilege, we as reporters were wondering all along the way if they were going to do just that. What did you make of that?
Well, I think it's a positive development. I mean, I think that, you know, I don't know what his motives were. My guess is that he had plenty of people, the president in his circle, who were telling him that doing that would be kind of politically disastrous and would just further consume his presidency and scandal. But I do think that this is a good moment to kind of pull back and zoom out and two kind of positive things here, two good things. One is that for all the president's bluster and reported threats of firing the special counsel, you know, we saw reports about this throughout the investigation. The investigation was allowed to be completed, and the report is about to be made public, the redacted report at least. The other good thing here is that at least on this question of collusion or conspiracy, I think it's a good thing. Whatever you think of the president and his politics and everything else, we should be able to agree that it's a good thing that there was no conspiracy between the president of the United States and the Russian government that was established to swing a presidential election. And I hope that as a country, we can at least acknowledge those two things as we move forward on the rest of these questions.
Let's take a call from David calling from Seabrook, New Hampshire. Hi there, David.
Hey there. Thanks for having me. I was just going to, you know, your initial question about will this change opinions. For me, no. I mean, the transparency of this presidency is, or Donald Trump, is pretty low. You know, he says he's a genius, but no one can see his grades. He says he's a millionaire, billionaire, but no one can see his tax returns. And now there's going to be a tremendous fight to get a unredacted report into the hands of people who should get it, the Judiciary Committee or whomever. I can understand they want sources and methods and things of that nature, but it just seems like why would anyone believe anything that this person in this administration is doing.
David, we appreciate you calling. Jimmy's on the line. He is calling from Moore, Oklahoma. Hi there, Jimmy.
Hello. I just wanted to say I'm looking forward to the report. But the important thing I think happened today is William Barr passed the litmus test of loyalty for Donald Trump. And that's, we know that that's what he requires. But I think Mueller is somebody that we don't get to hear from that type of person very often, that kind of honesty, I guess. And so that's why I look forward to it. And that's all.
Okay. I want to talk a little bit about what we might expect to hear from Congress. And let's take a look at some things that some members of Congress have already said. Here is New York Republican Congressman Peter King speaking on Fox News yesterday about what he will be looking for as the Mueller report comes out.
I know there will be no evidence at all of any collusion. And when Democrats say not enough to show a criminal case, no, nothing at all. As far as collusion, as far as obstruction of justice, I think probably there'll be elements in there like was firing Jim Comey obstruction of justice, was criticizing the Mueller investigation obstruction of justice. I would say absolutely not. I think the Democrats are going to try to hang their hat on some of those allegations. And then whatever it is, any word that's redacted or blacked out, they're going to say that's where the conspiracy was.
And Connecticut Democratic Congressman Jim Himes spoke with CNN's Chris Cuomo last night. He said that he trusts that the special counsel had good reasons for choosing not to subpoena President Trump for testimony during the Mueller investigation.
Unlike the attorney general, who's been an unbelievable disappointment to me, a guy that I thought had some stature, I still put an awful lot of faith in Bob Mueller. So let's hope and let's give him the benefit of the doubt that he had good reason for doing what he did.
Now, McKay, we've known for a while that Speaker Nancy Pelosi all but has taken impeachment off the table. She's raised the bar very high on that. So when we're hearing both sides come out and message in Congress, what will be the end game here?
Well, that's the question, right? I mean, the question of impeachment was even before the report was, or the investigation was completed, there was not a huge appetite for impeachment on the Hill, even among a lot of Democrats, certainly among Democratic leadership. Today, I don't see that being different. Now, let's see what's in the report. Maybe depending on what these episodes of potential obstruction look like and how the public reacts to them, maybe that'll change. More likely, what I think you'll see is a lot of partisan politics going on. Now, there is good reason. There is good reason to hear from Bob Mueller. And if he is invited to testify and accept that invitation and testifies before Congress, I think that could be valuable for us as a country to see. But I think that what you'll see is, remember, we're entering into a presidential campaign season. A lot of Democrats in Congress are currently running for the Democratic primary, and they're going to be using this as an opportunity to cater to their base, to be seen as somebody who can be tough against Trump, somebody that Democrats can trust to go up head to head against Trump in a general election. And I think that we'll see a lot of partisan theatrics in the coming weeks on the Hill around these issues. Yeah. But it seems unlikely that they're going to amount to impeachment, at least unless something dramatically changes.
Mark Updegrove, there's bound to be more information in this 400-plus page report, not just about the legalities, but sort of paints the broader picture that involves a lot of other people, including members of President Trump's White House and his family. Of course, there was that 2016 meeting at Trump Tower with Donald Trump Jr., Jared Kushner, Paul Manafort, and Russian lawyer Natalia Vetlaneskaya. I always have trouble saying that name. About this proffered dirt on Hillary Clinton, for example, or what Roger Stone, what connection he may have had involving WikiLeaks, or maybe even more details about Paul Manafort and his connection to Russian and Ukrainian nationals. Is that going to play a major role in shaping the history of this?
I think there's no question. That doesn't look good, whether it's
whether we find evidence of collusion or obstruction of justice or whatever, those things simply don't look good. And I think the one thing that we can say, Kimberly, is that I think you can fault Donald Trump for discrediting the process and through which this was investigated and calling it a witch hunt. There was clear evidence, as our intelligence apparatus determined, that the Russians were interfering with our elections. That's, at this point, that's incontrovertible. And there is nothing more important to a democracy than the integrity of our elections. So this is a process that had to play out. And I think if our president should want to see what was revealed around the possibility of Russians, a foreign power, tampering in our election, that there has to be transparency around that. So that was one of the things that disappointed me. And I think that there will likely be revelations in this report that are further damaging to the Trump camp.
Nancy, our time is almost up, but I wanted to put to you the issue or the question, the point that Attorney General Barr made about the nation should feel relieved that this report concluded that there was not action among President Trump or members of his campaign to collude with Russians. What's your response to that?
Sure, we should feel relieved that there was no overt conspiracy. But let me just sort of distill from this a couple of facts. The Russians interfered with our election. President Trump rewarded them for that interference with discussions of lifting sanctions and with discussions delegitimizing that observation. So while we should be happy that it didn't amount to a crime, what you have is someone who is by his word and deed, rather than investigate, he's encouraging the Russians to do it again.
All right. Nancy Gertner is a retired federal judge and lecturer at Harvard Law School and a WBUR legal analyst. Thanks so much for coming in.
Thank you.
And McKay Coppins is a staff writer at The Atlantic and the author of The Wilderness, Deep Inside the Republican Party's Combative, Contentious, Chaotic Quest to Take Back the White House. Thanks so much, McKay.
Thanks for having me.
And Mark Updegrove is president and CEO of the Lyndon Baines Johnson Foundation. It was great to have you with us.
Thanks, Nancy.
You can continue the conversation and get the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. You can also follow us on Twitter and find us on Facebook on On Point at On Point Radio. I'm Kimberly Atkins. This is On Point.